Welcome, folks, to this week's Valley Edition. We have a special situation here, that we have Zaz Hollander, independent journalist, and Terry Snyder, independent blogger. And we have an empty chair. Now, I'm not going to suggest that we're going to speak to that empty chair. We're going to be speaking to a number of issues that occurred this past year, week. And I'm going to begin by throwing out one that looking out the window, is a very obvious, a different situation, and that is the weather. Who would like to talk a little bit about what's going on? Zaz, go for it.
I will talk about the snow or the lack of it out there. We talked last week about the almost catastrophic fire that started just above town. Fires don't usually start and spread in November with snow on the ground. We had a subdivision evacuated. We had firefighters out for hours. What one was injured with hypothermia. We have businesses that depend on snow, you know, snow machine, retailers, repair, the ski resorts in town, Alyeska. You know, anybody who wants to play in the snow, everybody is scratching their heads and losing money, some of them, because there isn't any cover on the ground. But one of the hidden problems with no snow is pipes and septic systems. And I actually talked with a guy in Wasilla last week whose leach field froze.
Already. Okay.
And so he called his company, a septic company, and they said $800 to thaw it. And he said, I'm going to wait till it snows before I spend money thawing out this frozen field. So he's renting an outhouse or something like that. I called the weather service this morning, and we talked about that a little bit. And the forecaster I spoke with said that means that the biggest problem with these kind of cold temperatures and no snow is that the frost level keeps getting deeper. And so right now, if that kind of nasty stuff is happening, it means the frost level is down to 5 to 6 feet already. And so,
Well, I thought about that when people have spoken and described that kind of situation without snow cover, and somehow my mind balks at seeing that. I'm thinking, okay, the frost begins to go down. It's down 2 feet, 3 feet, 4 feet. You have a snow cover on it. So what we're saying is that somehow the very cold air above continues to push down that very cold frozen ground.
Right.
So that even though you have frozen ground already down a number of feet, it's really going to be affected by the cold temperatures if you don't have insulation with the snow.
It's even more frozener.
It's more frozen.
It's more frozen because you don't have that insulating cover on the ground. My house is freezing because we don't have any snow on our roof.
Okay.
Right, and there, you know, there's also, you talked about the economics of it, and a lot of small business people out there who have contracts with the borough and the cities for snow removal. That's going to affect everybody's bottom line. And then there's, you know, the flood issue next year that I know the people in Talkeetna are very worried about, some areas that are iced over there that are not supposed to be iced over right now. And the other thing, I made my first trip across Big Lake last weekend to drive across, and it is so high. If you look at the docks, and having seen that lake go out several times, the wind shifts that ice around, and when the water is so high like that and didn't have a chance to drain, I will suspect this will be one of those years you're going to see docks and pilings up, way up, and a lot of docks will come out, depending on what kind of breakup we have. So I don't even think we know what the scope of this weather is like right now. But, you know, we're all hoping with Colony Christmas in Palmer, it'll be the end of a nice, lovely snow fall for the celebration, and we can get on with it and at least get a little bit of a blanket of snow.
And we have some predictions and projections that say, yes, snow tomorrow.
I have the latest from the Weather Service from this morning.
Share that.
Is 1 to 5 inches.
Wow.
1 to 5 inches.
They're hedging their bets a little bit.
Yeah, okay. I wouldn't delay that snow dance tonight, though. I think we need all the
keep
encouragement
the
we can get. Yeah.
Okay, it would be nice to wake up tomorrow morning, and there it is, the snow. Now, of course, those people who are going to be listening to this today will be able to judge. They will be hearing us talk about tomorrow. We rebroadcast this, of course, on Monday. And that'll be an interesting thing to check and see what happened over the weekend that we were projecting might happen. All right. Any last ideas about the weather and its impact? It's cold. It's getting a little warmer. Going to have a little bit of snow. Okay. We covered that. That's pretty good. Let's go on to the local political scene. We've had two different meetings this past week that have had some interesting decision-making, the first being the assembly that met on Tuesday. I know that, Terry, you've covered that pretty well. Why don't you start, and then we'll have Zaz throw in.
Well, the most significant probably part of that meeting was sort of unexpectedly, by some people's accounts, they finally passed a tower ordinance. This is something that has been going on for some months with the borough, you know, having gotten rid of any type of tower ordinance last year, and they've been operating sort of as a testifier said, sort of as a wild west operation there, and towers have come up, it just proliferated all over the valley, and so it has been. Mr. Keough has made a couple of attempts to get one, and he has hasn't been successful in even getting it past the introduction stage, but it got past there, and now it has made it way for a vote, and it was a tie vote with Mr. Salmon and Mr. Arvin and Mr. Colligan standing firm against any tower ordinance, and Mr. Keough, Mr. Woods, and Mr. Halter voting for it, and so the mayor it was left to him, which happens occasionally, to be the tiebreaker, and he passed the tie-breaking vote. So we now have a tower ordinance, and there is some intent by the people, at least the mayor, that he wants to continue on working on this with his appointed advisory tower committee. I noticed there were five names for five positions open on a tower committee, so I think there is some thought that there'll be some tweaking of this. But by and large, they didn't make any amendments to it. They didn't. It wasn't a perfect ordinance. I guess the one thing missing that people probably would say is they didn't deal with any type of a fall radius there, and they're still just the normal setbacks of, you know, 10 feet from the property line. But there is, you know, it's a 44-page document that at least gives them some guidance. And what it doesn't do is it doesn't address everything that's already underway. So there's some thought that there is some 40 to 50 towers already in process, so they'll be grandfathered in. But from this forth, we'll at least have a little guidance. And that, I think, was met with overall very welcome by just across the board of people that agreed we should have something in place.
Okay. Good. Zaz, any comments?
Well, I listened to some of the testimony at that meeting, and it really seemed like, I mean, there were a lot of people there making really valid points. And, you know, I know that the assembly was concerned about coming off as pro-business, right, with this doing away with the ordinance on tall towers. And I think what this whole issue is showing is that there's a pretty bright line between being pro-business and being anti-private property and property rights. And, you know, this borough is all about property rights, and I think people tend to come out for these issues, people who normally wouldn't be coming out to government meetings,
right,
to make a stand for, you know, what they deserve from their government.
Right, because I think, you know, by and large, you know, when an issue affects us, that's when people get motivated to come out. And as somebody who goes regularly to these meetings, I was sharing with someone yesterday, just the scope of who is sitting down is different than who normally comes, because there are, you know, we've seen some unwinding of some regulation, and time has taken some time for people to be affected by those. And, you know, now they're looking at the multifamily again. Again, that brought out some of the same speakers, you know, from the felony flats issue. So they're starting to hear, and I have to suspect that some of the more staunch, you know, business-first advocates on that assembly, which make up the majority, are getting an earful from some people that they aren't likely to hear from too often. So I think that maybe has changed some thinking that, boy, there is some not the same voices telling them what they know they're already going to hear. So that may have effect, because they have made some significant votes that have surprised people in the last couple of times. So apparently they are hearing from, I think, some people that maybe they're not used to hearing from, which is a good thing in our borough.
And what was the reaction when the mayor broke the tie that way?
You know, there were people in the audience that were totally surprised. I said, boy, I didn't see that coming. You know, I wasn't that surprised. And I have to say, I wasn't that surprised, because I think that he was getting some heat from it. And I think there's been enough of this. I think it was getting harder to run from this issue. And I think that he thinks he can fix it, that he can make everybody happy by this group. It will empower him. It will be his little group. Although, you know, they're still accepting applications, so there is a downside there. See, he may have to consider more names than he has on this slate of people. The only person that testified against it, really, which is unusual, is somebody who has their name up on the committee. And what I was a little bit surprised of is there wasn't any industry there at all. So to me, that says either they really, and this is what somebody, you know, people have said, is they're not that, it's not that egregious that industry is that against it. Either that, or they just, it's popped around so much they didn't think the votes were there that they had to worry about it. But there was really no one there from industry that spoke against it. So it's a mandate.
Right, and I think later on the mayor was quoted and is on the record for saying that he has not ever supported having no tower ordinance. I think the issue it comes down to the fine details, and it was certainly I was in the audience, and I was one of those observing, watching this. There was a little dramatic moment when the count was made, and it was 3-3. And there was silence. And literally all eyes and ears were turned toward the mayor sitting in the center. And he looked to the left, he looked to the right. He, it didn't look as if he was thinking very much about this. I suspect it wasn't as if he was pondering all of it. He came out and said yes. And it was at that moment that I shifted my eyes to watch everyone else that was sitting up there. This group on the assembly would make, I think, an excellent set of players in a poker game, because their faces were pretty poker-faced.
Except we don't know with Mr. Arvin, because he wasn't there. So,
oh, yes.
You know, we don't know about that.
We don't know if it was a poker sound or whatever.
Right.
But the ones that were there were in that way. And I would also turn, there was another incident that I thought had some legs that we haven't talked about yet, and that is after the executive director of the recycling center spoke.
Mm-hmm.
When she finished speaking, I thought there was quiet. It wasn't total silence, but mm-hmm. there was quiet. I didn't see anyone in the assembly lean forward. And for those listeners who are not familiar with that situation, there was apparently an agreement made back in the day being at least a year ago, or maybe a little bit longer. And at that time, it was alleged that the borough agreed to provide in partnership in a federal grant an amount of money somewhere to the north of $400,000. And the time for making that happen, to provide a needed piece of equipment at the recycling center, has come. And I heard clearly stated that in communication with the borough administration, that money does not seem to be forthcoming. And so the next step was come, as many people do, to the assembly to speak to it. And what I saw was a very clear statement: this isn't the forum to do this. If you've had trouble before talking to the administration, the implication was meet with the administration and work out whatever it is. What was your opinion about that?
Well, having had a little bit of background on that, I think that they have exhausted that sort of. I think this was sort of the director's way of trying to get some movement on it. There have been meetings with the assistant manager and the manager and the finance manager, and it comes down to a difference, an opinion basically between finance, I think, and the recycling center of what the agreement was. And of course, the agreement was made back in the day when there was a different manager. Mr. Duffy was here. There was a year there was no manager, really, at the borough. So Mr. Moosey really wasn't on the scene. He's coming after the fact. But they did say, and I think the director of the recycling center did a good job presenting it. And I didn't get the sense that they didn't want to do anything. They just weren't ready to do something right then. It was news to her that of everything that she had given them, and they got all the information pretty much ahead of time, where things were, that there was an answer from finance that she hadn't seen, that the mayor said that they would be sharing with her. So I'm hopeful that they've not heard the end of this topic. But he made it evident, which kind of gets invoked sometimes, that it's not a question and answer period. It wasn't a work session. It was a presentation. So he wasn't going to give license for them to get into it right then. So it could have been a brush off, but I'm going to be guardedly optimistic that there will be some type of resolve for it, and that we will see, you know, as it goes. But I want to crawl back just a little bit to the tower thing, because there was one thing important that I didn't say, and that was that Mr. Culver recused himself. And I've had a few people email me, ask me about that. And Mr. Culver recused himself the last time Tower came up, saying he had a client interest in that he didn't want to be a part of. But
through his surveying.
Yeah. And what I found interesting about that is that he was front and center during the rewrite of the subdivision code. And I'm sure he has many clients within the borough. So that to me was I was sort of sad that maybe there was not more question to that, because it is up to the mayor and the assembly whether they let him, the mayor ultimately, I think, whether he should recuse himself. But there wasn't any question about it. And perhaps that was because he had successfully recused himself before. But I just wanted to go back with that. But Mr. Culver was one of the ones that did try to ask some questions about the recycling situation a little bit, and the mayor just kind of shut it down. So I'm hopeful. I think everybody at this point is on, I hope, on the, and I think everybody is on board about having the asset that recycling center is. And I don't think that anybody's real wanting to point finger or blame. I think they're wanting to say this is what we're all up against, and this is what we need to resolve it. And I'm hoping they'll take action early in their next meeting.
Let's turn a little bit to something that people don't seem to be on board of, and that is the ferry.
We haven't heard anything about the ferry.
Oh, the sound or of
that,
silence.
That $60,000 to $80,000 payment they have to make every month, no matter what. And so they only really gave, someone pointed out to me, they only have been doing it a month at a time. So they haven't really said, go ahead and pay the next month. But the manager does have within his discretion, as long as he reports it, to spend up to $100,000. It just has to be reported at the next assembly meeting. So maybe that's the plan.
Any guesses? We're looking toward Christmas. I have not heard since that last reference to perhaps sending it off to the South Pacific. And a little bit of discussion, a little bit of noise about that. But it sounds, this would appear to be a significant issue still. And once again, when I watch the assembly, I watch in particular to the end when comments are made. That's a time when people who have issues, they have pretty much free rein to bring up anything, request things, and do that. And I was struck that neither the ferry nor anything about the recycling center was mentioned at that time.
Yeah, it is sort of interesting, but I guess the first thing it makes me think about is the instruction as one of the goals during the goal-setting meeting, and this primarily came from Mr. Culligan, but they all agreed, is make that ferry go away. and they won't discuss it anymore. So maybe the manager...
Is this working on making it go away?
Making them not have to talk about it
anymore. Keep it off the agenda anyhow.
Yeah, but it wasn't. There wasn't a question, at least in the public, to the public in the manager's report, what's going on with the ferry, and are we just going ahead? It, maybe there's some internal memos going on. I would imagine they've been, I would hope they've been advised, but there was not a peep.
Okay, and we're... we have a couple of other topics to deal with here, and we can just, I think, leave the assembly by noting that it will not meet again in regular session until January.
Right. They have a joint meeting with the school board on the 11th, next Tuesday,
okay.
And they do have an agenda posted for that, but they've canceled their December 18th meeting, and they will not meet until January.
Okay.
Right?
So you mentioned the school board. And one of the big issues there, I mean, there are many things the school board is dealing with in terms of budget and funding and the rest, but the one that is leaping right up in front of us is the replacement question. And any comments about that? Zaz, you want to start that one?
Yeah, the replacement question surrounds Lynn Gaddis, who is a current school board member elected to her first state house seat, and so she will be sworn in Juneau. On January 15th, and that is the date that her resignation from the school board becomes effective. And so as I understand it, this came up sort of in passing at the most recent school board meeting, but the board has 30 days to replace a vacancy, and they're going to choose to wait until after the holidays?
They're going to, you know, everybody knows it's not a secret that she's, it's been well publicized that she doesn't intend to fulfill her last year of her term until October. So I think they talked about putting it on the webpage that they were going to begin to take applications, but not actually advertising it, and they will have an advertising period, accept resumes, I think, an application resume, so to speak, and a cover letter from the 1st through the 15th, and then depending upon how many they get, they don't know whether they'll get 2, 3, 15, they'll set out, it will be a public process for interviewing the applicant. They did speak a little bit about having some type of an executive session to discuss with the head of HR at the district to tell them what the guidelines of what they could ask in a public setting, which I'm not real sure how that works on an executive session, if that's one thing you can meet on. But they did talk about it and seemed to agree on that. But I think they pretty much have agreed, you know, we're going to wait. We have 30 days from the 15th, and so they're going to work within that time scope, and I think that's their plan.
And that's all as required by school board policy, you know, the 30-day period, the getting the widest pool of candidates possible, the public involvement. Seems a little hinky to be going into executive session to discuss.
Right.
You know,
I looked a little bit. I meant to look it up again. But, you know, executive sessions, guidelines are by the state, and it's pretty clear that it – and I'm not sure that falls within that either.
It's
I didn't
not a personnel
look at
matter
it.
Because it's not
it's a
releasing anybody's
matter.
Identity.
Right.
Yeah.
And they could ask, you know, through the clerk or through the superintendent, what the appropriate guidelines are, what topics. So they may work that out as they get down. But I think it was they didn't want it to get lost. Mr. Larson was really the most insistent on not doing anything right now, that he did wanted to wait till after the holiday. And I think, you know, that it made sense to everybody.
I think that when I spoke with Lynn about this a few weeks ago, that was part of her stated rationale for waiting until January 15th, and maybe she had some conversations with some school board members, ex parte, I mean, right. Legally, but that it would be easier for them. I mean, we all know the holidays are a busy time, right. So it would just be easier on the board if she decided to put off her resignation. And there is another aspect of Lynn Gaddis going to Juneau, and that is she's taking, my air quotes aren't visible on the air, but she's taking another school board member with her, Eric Cordero.
Right.
Is going to be working for her down there, and he's staying on
the
board.
Staff,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And he, neither of them were at the school board meeting, it should be said. She had already said ahead of time that she was not going to be there because she had a pre-planned vacation. I'm not sure why Mr. Cordero wasn't there. So neither of them were there to weigh in on this.
Just okay. So, right, that'll be an interesting discussion because it leads to the broader question that has been raised in regard to other people who have served, whether it's in Anchorage or here on various bodies, the assemblies. And how much time can you be away and still fulfill your responsibilities, and does it vary, and so on. That's going to be something I think that more and more people are going to be looking at. Some bodies have actually taken action in Anchorage to define what that means, and we may look at that. But we have 3 minutes left, and in 3 minutes, it's amazing how quickly time flies here. But in the last 3 minutes, I'd like to turn to our last topic, which is emergency preparedness. Recently, many of us felt that 5-point-something earthquake. And as a result of that, there have been a number of articles that have occurred. I've seen them in various local media, reminding that 5.6 could get bigger. And if it did, are we prepared? So are we prepared? What's your feeling about that?
I think we're rarely, if ever, truly prepared. I mean, that's why these disasters are disasters, is we don't expect them very accurately. I think that in the borough, there are some aspects of our emergency response system. I mean, we praised Patty Sullivan last week. In terms of getting information to the public, the borough seems to have a pretty good system in place. But we also saw, with the recent cold weather and with the winds, that there was a lot of major holes in cell coverage. And so if you've got a smartphone and no power, you still may not be getting any information. So I guess my quick answer is no, we're not prepared. I'll let Terry take it.
Well, and I also think it depends on the scope of it and in the time of year and where it's affected most. You know, because in the core, what I was so impressed with during the fire was everybody making every attempt to say, what can I do, what can I do, almost getting in the way of each other. But when you get to those most remote areas where neighbors aren't as close and not as engaged as we are every day, that's where, and there's a lack of supplies and cut off of transportation. And so it is hard to prepare, but I think it certainly is a little bit more on the top of people's mind when you have one of these disasters.
Well, the other point that I would make is a phrase that's often heard, size matters. If you have a disaster that's localized, even the flooding in some respects that occurred recently was localized. There were areas that were affected, areas that were not affected. And so you could take resources and move to the affected areas. The area-wide type, because you can't move from place to place. Every place is affected. And I think that's been the point that's been raised. And we'll be, I'm sure, hearing more about how individuals can prepare and how communities might want to look at their preparedness, too. Well, we have a couple of seconds left. Any last comments to make? Let's start with Zaz.
I guess my only thought to follow up on that last train is that if anybody is prepared, some Alaskans might be pretty high on the list. Generators, lots of food. People who are
using... last thoughts I have is everybody do their snow dance, because I think that can cause sort of a disaster, not as this significance probably as an earthquake, but there can be some pain from that too. So we're hoping.
Okay, slow-moving disaster affecting everyone.
Right. There you go.
Right. Thank you, Zaz Hollander, independent journalist, and Terry Snyder, independent blogger, for being in here. Next week we'll be back, and this time Mark Kelsey will join in.